on the open seas for days and sometimes weeks or even months at a time. With shoddy living conditions, little time to rest, spoiled food to eat, and sometimes mistreatment by the ship's crew or captain. That's sometimes the sort of millions of men and women who make a living from fishing. More fishers die on the job than workers in almost any other profession. And sometimes, instead of receiving a just wage, they're given a share of the value of the fish they help catch. Until now, no international legislation has protected the working conditions of the world's fishers. But now, under the UN umbrella, 437 countries in June 2007 overwhelmingly agreed to a new convention for fishermen. But not one nation has yet ratified it. And that, says the Vatican office responsible for the apostleship of the sea, must change.
Regarding both maritime transport and fishing, the ILO adopted some important conventions in 2006 and 2007 that represent a great opportunity for the maritime world. Now the apostleship of the sea needs to carry out a task of advocacy around the world so that these conventions will be ratified and have force of law as soon as possible.
Archbishop Agostino Marchetto is secretary of the Pontifical Council for Migrants.
The world of fishing is in crisis. World fish stock is at its lowest. For the first time in the world history, it is feared that fish will disappear from the seas. Since more than a billion people depend on fishing for their food needs, and an estimated 41 million people work directly in this activity. The exhaustion of fish resources represents, therefore, a very great danger for all these people. Entire communities of fishers are threatened with extinction, and so a whole way of life is in the process of disappearing. The workers of the sea tend to work and act individually. This is why their voice is rarely heard on the national or international level. It is also AM's duty to be the voice of the voiceless by helping them to become aware of the situation they are living and the deadlines they will have to face. It is also a duty to always be close and have solidarity with all the living forces working in this sector for the good and dignity of man.
Ted Richardson is one of those who's calling for the ratification of the new Convention for the Good and Dignity of Fishermen. He's regional director of the Apostleship of the Sea in Oceania. I asked him why no one has signed this important protocol.
I struggle to understand the rationale in things like the ILO.
Which is the International Labour Organization.
Yeah, which will sit down and thrash out a fundamental right of every person to care for what they need, what their minimum standards of working and conditions and environment that they work in, it should be like. And all the countries will say, this is great, we have a document here that we can call Convention 188. And then they make recommendations for minimum standards of wages, food, these sorts of things for people. And they'll put a recommendation to it. And then it gets put on a shelf. 2 years later, we get this recommendation and this convention coming out to us, and it says, well, how many nations have ratified? Since they all agreed to it, how many nations have ratified? None. Not a one.
So all these nations, though, are involved in the production of this convention.
Yeah.
However, none of them wants to sign up to it.
No. It's just because they say, well, we've done our work.
Our consciences
our conscience
are clear.
Is clear. Mm-hmm. We've said what the minimum standards are here. Who's going to be the first one to ratify it? And they all sit back and wait for somebody else to be first.
The first one.
And everyone says, well, we've got better standards than this in that country anyway, so why bother ratifying it? The point of ratifying is that it makes it law that people can't abuse somebody else's labour. That if a ship came to my country and we've ratified this, we have the power to say, hang on, we've got you. We can fine you under our law because we've ratified this ILO convention. So we can actually seize your vessel, we can take your stock, we can charge you with breaking the law. But at the moment we say, it's none of our business, you know, you can have a 10-year-old child working on a fishing vessel and nothing we can do about it.
But presumably many of these countries, as you say, have their own individual legislation that guarantees that a 10-year-old child is not working on a sea vessel.
And we have it in Australia. We have minimum standards for Australians working on these ships. The National Director of India was telling me that their minimum level of somebody working on a ship is 18 years of age. But if another ship came in with a child of 10 or 8, nothing they can do because they've not ratified this. So they can't say, sorry, you can't have that person work on that ship. It is illegal to have that person work on that ship. And until you employ people at the right age, we won't let your vessel go.
So explain this to me a little bit better. A ship comes in from Southeast Asia or something into an Australian port. It has a 10-year-old child working on board. The Australian port authorities are not allowed to do anything about it?
No. It's under a different country's rules and regulations.
But it's on Australian territory.
Yeah, but we've not ratified the convention, so we have no power to inspect it. Our maritime safety authorities cannot go on board the ship and look at the food conditions or look at the sleeping conditions on board the ship or the minimum age of the employees on the ship or how they're paid or how they're sustained. They have no authority to do anything other than say, is your ship seaworthy? Will it sink in our waters? If it won't sink in our waters, then off you go again.
So why aren't countries signing up for this?
I struggle to understand why.
They just don't want to be bothered. It's an extra police and security cost.
Yeah. They write the legislation for the ILO, and then it goes into a shelf, and it sits there. And the guys in the ILO struggle themselves to get these things out into the public. They come to us in the Pontifical Council meetings and said, we need to ask your help to get this to your governments so that your governments can understand from you that this is needed because they're not listening to us. We're just the ILO. We might have a nice big logo and a nice big place that we all come to meet, but unless you do it in your country, it's not going to happen. We can scream and yell, but they're not going to listen to us. They'll only listen to you and your people because you're the voters. You're the ones that put the governments in power, and you're the ones that can take them out. And we can't do anything but ask them, please, can you ratify this? So we need to rattle cages in our governments. And every nation needs to look at these conventions and resolutions and say, adopt them. They're not so hard. You've already agreed to them. You've already had them on the table. You've read them all and you've said, yes, we agree to them. Adopt them. Make them work.
And what are some of the things that are contained in this convention?
The main things are minimum age.
It's called, actually, I see the brochure here, it's called Decent Working Conditions, Safety and Social Protection, Working in Fishing Convention.
Yeah. That is basically exactly what it says. It's the working conditions, what hours that people are made to work. They can't work people for 22 hours a day. They have a minimum food requirement and safe food, that they're not eating spoiled food, that young people are not brought into the industry below a certain age, that they have an education, that they are trained and educated in the work that they're undertaking, that they have the ability to be able to go ashore, to spend time, to make sure their families are fairly compensated for that person's employment. Then that person gets compensated well for their employment as well. These are just the minimum standards that we should have, that we expect in our jobs. In the first world, that we look for a job, we know when we go for an interview for a job that we're going to have a certain amount of hours that we're going to be working for, that we will have a morning tea and a lunch, that we will have a time that we will knock off and go home, that we'll have a weekend or we're paid overtime or
health insurance, retirement, all that sort of thing.
Superannuation, and whether you're compensated if you're injured at work.
Mm. But what about these? But isn't this quite onerous for many governments if they have to start policing or investigating to see whether even, you know, small family-run businesses, fishing vessels and so on, who might have one or two or three or four people working together? Isn't that maybe perhaps one of the reasons why governments haven't signed up to this? Because it's quite an onerous thing.
In some ways, you could say yes, but if you're looking at a family business, then a family work at making it better for the family. They work at looking after each other. They care about each other. They're not going to work one of their family into the ground to say, you know, you keep slaving away so that, you know, I can have some time off or I can go on a holiday. So a family business is probably a good analogy for governments to look at to say, would I look after my children this way? Would I treat my kids this way? Let's make sure that if you need a doctor, we make sure we get you to a doctor. You need good food, let's make sure I get you good food. Not feed you poorly, not treat you poorly.
Do you ever get in this work that you do jaded? Do you ever feel, I'm fighting for the rights of these people and nothing's happening?
It becomes frustrating at times when you feel like often you're just a voice in the wilderness, you know, crying out, say, come on, do something. You get annoyed, and then all of a sudden you get a seafarer comes up to you, and he'll say, thank you. And it'll just be, thank you for what? I didn't do anything. You did a lot for me. You spoke for me. You talked for us as fishers. You talked for us as seafarers. We heard you on a radio, or we read something about you in the newspaper, and you have nothing to gain by talking for us, and you talk for us. And just to get one person to say thank you just builds you up to say, I can fight harder, I can work harder, I can do more. Because you know you've made an effect on somebody. Maybe somebody you've never met, somebody you will never ever see, but you know that in your heart you've made something better for somebody else somewhere else. And that's the important thing that we should all have in our life, that whether you're a radio presenter here in the Vatican and you don't see a seafarer ever in your life, you know that through this media you have touched a seafarer, you have touched somebody, you've made their life better. And in doing that, you've improved the world. You've made it better for seafarers. The listeners that listen to the broadcast will go and talk to somebody else, will talk to a family member and say, I heard this, I now know what this is about, and I can do something. So in every way you do something, you improve it. So that builds you up as a person. You say, we can make a difference, whether we're one or whether we're many, we can make a difference. And we do.
Ted Richardson is Regional Director of the Apostleship of the Sea for Oceania. Thank you.